30th Words and Pictures. SW Concert speaks with Gary and Ann Lundgren of Ashland, who have produced an independent feature entitled Phoenix, Oregon, a comedic look at the midlife struggles in the rural Northwest. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.FM or on iTunes and Google Play. KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to KBOO.FM or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
What might an artist near the end of a well-lived life tell us about the creative process and the personal qualities or values they think are important for living a good life? Hi, I'm Bob Madar, inviting you to come on over to Local Folks Podcast for our last visit with Mickey and listen to him talk about what he has learned after 96 years on the planet. You can find Local Folks at KBOO.FM. Go to audio, list of programs, podcasts, web only, and click on Local Folks.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bonds Over Borders on Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m. at the Cleaners at Ace Hotel in Portland. Bonds Over Borders is a benefit for Innovation Law Lab, a Portland-based organization that works to increase legal access for immigrants at detention centers, both locally and around the country. There will be live stand-up sets from Adam Passy and Dan Weber and live music by Pedro Queriega. Again, that's Bonds Over Borders on Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m. at the Cleaners at Ace Hotel, 403 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Jake Vermoss. Today we're speaking with poet Michelle Penaloza. Welcome to Between the Covers, Michelle. Thanks for your patience. Well,
yeah, no worries. Thank you for doing this.
You know, because like I was reading something that from Kaveh Akbar or somebody about how like we kind of need to be our own canon makers and just sort of like uplift the work that we want to see in the world and, you know, do book reviews and stuff. I haven't written any book reviews yet, but I'm working on it.
If you want to, I got a book for you.
Oh, yeah? Can I get a free copy? I hear it's pretty good.
I think it's pretty good. I mean, people seem to like it.
So I already, like, pre-recorded the intro. I can read it again if you want.
I mean, if you want me to hear it, but yeah, go for it.
Okay, all right. Michelle Penaloza was born in the suburbs of Detroit, Michigan, and grew up in the suburbs of Nashville, Tennessee. She is the author of two chapbooks, Landscape Heartbreak, To Sylvia's 2015, and Last Night I Dreamt of Volcanoes, Organic Weapon Arts 2015. Former Possessions of the Spanish Empire, winner of the 2018 Hillary Gravendike National Poetry Prize, is her debut full-length collection. Her poems appear in Prairie Schooner, New England Review, Tri-Quarterly, Pleiades, Electric Literature, Poetry Northwest, and other journals and anthologies. A Kuhneman Fellow, she is the recipient of the Starlin Poetry Prize from the University of Oregon, grants from Artist Trust and For Culture, as well as fellowships and scholarships from Vona Voices, Oregon Literary Arts, the Richard Hugo House, Lemon Tree House, Caldera, the Breadloaf Writers Conference, and the Key West Literary Seminar, among others. Michelle lives in rural Northern California. Welcome to Between the Covers, Michelle.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you and read some poems, and also I'm excited to be coming to Portland.
Yeah, that's something that I definitely, we should plug at the end or now, because two of the organizations listed in that Literary Arts and Caldera have, you know, graciously organized to, you know, partner with White Noise Project, my little reading series, to help bring you up here in September. And then we're having a super AZN karaoke literary party the next day. So yeah, that's really exciting. But yeah. So to sort of switch over to the former possessions of the Spanish Empire, I wanted to ask about the title because I found it very evocative. in a lot of ways.
Thanks.
Because the kind of temporality of being former and also possessions to me kind of sort of connecting in my mind to both the possessions of the territory and the people.
Yeah, so the title actually came from a conversation with another poet, Mario Alejandro Ariza, who, you know, is also from a country colonized, or like his heritage comes from a country of folks colonized by the Spanish as well, the Dominican Republic. And we were at Breadloaf and we were, I forget who said the phrase first, but we were just like talking about like, you know, how we both have Z's in our last names and just like the legacies of colonialism and the ways that that affected like our upbringings and Catholicism and various things like that. And then the phrase came up, former possessions of the Spanish Empire, and it was one of those like poet moments where you lock eyes and you're like, I'm writing that first. and then I wrote that poem.
Right.
The poem that opens up the book, which also became the title of the collection, Former Possessions of the Spanish Empire. And the title, the first time I published it in vinyl, it was Former Possessions of the Spanish Empire, or Why My Last Name is Peñalosa.
Oh,
and so
okay.
That's sort of how it came up. And then, you know, I had read about the Catalogo de Apellidos, which is, you know, something that the Spanish came up with as a creative way, or uncreative way, really, to tax everyone.
Bureaucratic way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. To just be like, okay, well, this area on this map, we'll just name everybody. We'll just start with P's. Everyone in this area, every family gets a surname, and it's going to, this area is P's. So I read about that and I was like thinking about how, you know, arbitrary and also how presumptive
right.
to name people in such a fashion. And just thinking about like what that means, you know, like the erasure and replacement and the title possessions too. I mean, like, I really like your question in terms of thinking about it in terms of the temporality, like former possessions, as in no longer, and yet it is worth saying all of that, former possessions of the Spanish Empire, because it's not like the effects of colonialism go away,
right?
They reverberate. And so thinking about that, and then also, you know, a large section of the book really explores and engages with questioning an abusive relationship as well. And so thinking about like, I don't know, I guess like what I was wrestling with as I was writing a lot of the poems in the book, and also, you know, that kind of came up as I was creating the structure for the book, is what are the reverberations of this macro history of colonialism, and how does that affect the way that we as colonized bodies give and receive love, how we, you know, I guess one of the questions I asked myself was like, did I find myself in this abusive relationship because I was a colonized person? Like, I don't think it's a one-to-one ratio, but that was like one of the things I was thinking about. And so trying to explore possession in that sense of being formerly possessed, of being formerly possessed by another person, but then also there's this kind of connotation too of possession as in like being possessed by like an evil spirit too, or the devil, of like being made to do things that you wouldn't do, or like, so there's kind of all of those tensions running together.
Right, it's kind of a double hinged meaning, and like but they both kind of signify a lack of agency or a kind of reduction or flattening in some way.
Yeah, and then also the surviving of that.
Right, because a lot of the poems are very kind of like a reclaiming or feeling kind of empowered through talking through some of these traumatic events, traumatic history. Could you read the title poem for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me get my book out here. Okay.
On top of the laundry.
Former possessions of the Spanish Empire. People name us with the separation of their teeth, the long Z of our naming. It used to be we were named for our proximity. Gato Tabing Dagat, the parentage of the sea. The forest lineage, Gato Ginu Batan. Or we were named for our parents, Anak Nilina, Bunso Niboyet. The song of our names led to the law. A governor general made a name for himself with the Catalogo de Apellidos, a dissemination of empire, a naming of parts to trace and tax everyone. Whole provinces renamed with efficient alphabetical phenomena. Padilla, Pacheco, Palma, Paz, Perez, Portillo, Puente, Peñalosa. Still, there were names we kept to ourselves, a shorthand between us. Windows lined with votives, jars of holy water, the papaya's lush coral and beaded seeds, shining fish row. Can legacy exist in shorthand? Papal, papa, papel, papaya, paalam, permission, please. What are the root words for what we simply know? How do children born of empire, once removed, possess the history of their naming?
Cool. Well, could we hear another poem?
Yeah. Let's see. Do you have a request, or can I just pick one? Or
when will we ache less?
Thank you so much for that post that you posted about like reading that in that moment. How are you doing after that too, by the way, that weekend?
Wow. Yeah, that was intense.
Yeah, I mean, like, it makes me feel good to know that my poem was helpful to you in a moment like that, because, I mean, I don't know what we're in anymore this time.
Right.
And I feel like whatever moments we can find to connect with each other and like kind of like reach our hands out and be like, you're okay, I'm okay, we're okay, we're gonna be okay.
It's like checking in, right?
Yeah, I think, I think that this is a good poem to read for right now. When will we ache less? From a desert in Nevada, a man launches flowers into space. Just now I thought, why? When you are closer, am I more lonely? The you could be anyone. Maybe distance is what I equate with love. You are away, and I am alone with the bullfrogs and crickets and raccoons that pull up the new sod like carpet, their child fingers searching for grubs in moonlight. Elsewhere, white men chant, you will not replace us. Why is being born white in America not enough? Above me, the geese form haphazard, V, 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 floating over the house, loose victories each twilight, paraded from one sewage pond to the other across town. They don't leave the valley for winter. This world and what comes from our garden is too much to process. Abundance is a burden of responsibility. This rash of tomatoes reappears and reappears with so little effort, with so little to do with me. What is it like to be everywhere? To be seen and heard and known and believed with so little effort, so little to do with you. I collect facts. Facts are marbles in my mouth. How to hold each one, how to keep, how to speak, how to scream with so much to contain. My mouth grows bigger and bigger. Butcher birds hold their prey and dismember it. The cacti their knife and larder. 26 young Nigerian women were fished from the Mediterranean and dried as headlines and disappeared again. Bullets shot from an AR-15 move through bodies like boats, exits wounds the size of oranges. Hyenas eat ghosts that wander the streets. They eat the bones the butcher's sons and sons and sons feed them from their hands. Someone found a grasshopper stuck among Van Gogh's olive trees, trapped 128 years. Dragonflies hover over the kiddie pool we soak in to beat the heat. Thrips burnish 1,000 holes into a row of bright green leaves. The scuttle of skinks along the fence line sings feline, a Rolodex of ours. A raccoon just made carcass splayed across the road. The cattle wires come alive with feathered gargoyles. Spread wings follow each speeding car. Every hour, more wings, sky full, coast on warm carrion wind. I could measure the days this way. Name after name after name. The raccoon, a meat balloon fur crumple, disappearing, disappearing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's disappearing, but I feel like the raccoons sort of reappear, and I'm fascinated with the isolation, kind of in a garden. In this poem, it almost feels like I want to interpret that you wrote it, you know, in your current home in Northern California, but the world keeps intruding because the news is just so ridiculous every day.
Yeah, it's pretty rural and isolated up here, but you know, we still have the internet, so we can still read the news. Yep.
Yeah. So it feels like kind of distant and yet very immediate in some ways.
I agree with that.
Could you talk a little bit about like the food, the sort of appearance in food and a lot of things that, I mean, between you and your friend Jane Wong, there's a lot of sort of food references and raccoon references. I'm just curious where the raccoons come from.
Well, I forget how that even like came up, but so it's kind of like Jane and Tessa and I, so Jane Wong, Tessa Halls, and myself. I forget like when or how we started referring to ourselves as this like weird little raccoon trio, but like, you know, we talk about how the three of us are sort of on a spectrum often with like things, like two of us being at polar opposites and one in the middle. Often I'm the one in the middle with like Jane and Tessa being on the other extremes, but like we joke about how we're like, we're raccoons and that we like kind of rifle through trash and we'll eat anything and like are kind of cute but ruthless. I don't really know where it came from necessarily. I think it just, I don't remember. It just sort of happened one day and then it just sort of stuck. But I think raccoons as creatures, you know, I admire and fear them because they are and can be vicious. There's this one time when I still lived in Seattle and I was walking with my friend Matthew. We were coming back from, I forget when, I might have been Pride, I don't know, but we were just like walking back to my apartment and there was this alley that we're like walking down, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's these shadows, these kind of bouncy round shadows like coming toward us, and we're like, oh, I bet there's cat, it's like a cat, it's like a huge cat coming toward us, and we were like kind of like almost like bending down ready to like
Pet it?
Oh my god. No. It was a raccoon.
It was a trash panda.
And it was a family of raccoons. And they were huge. They were huge. They were so large. And we ran. We like squealed and ran from them because they were huge. And we were in their alley.
Oh my god.
And we had no being there.
You were intruding.
We were intruding. But like, I don't know what it is. Like, I feel like, I don't know, it makes me think of Lowell's Skunk Hour with like the skunk dipping its head in the container of sour cream that he's watching. There's something about that animal I find affinity with, the little burglar mask, the hands really, they're crafty, you know,
right.
But they're also round and they've got these crazy tails, and I don't know what it is. There's just something about them that
they're almost human.
There's a lot of good,
right?
Yeah. There's also a lot of good raccoon gifts.
I was gonna say I have some raccoon memes I can send you.
Yeah, I'm sure I've seen them, but also I always welcome them.
Okay.
Just to say.
Okay. So, could we hear one more poem?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Let's do. Actually, I feel like I haven't read this one as much at reading, so it might be fun to read for this. Let's do Payatas.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay. Payatas. Rizal forever gazes at the passing posse, donning his bronze bowler hat. He rivals Niobe, seeing, smelling, this river reduced to runnel, following its scent past Malacañang to Quezon. A place once ravine, now a city, built along tributaries of trash. Payatas, a steaming cordillera supporting life atop the refuse that shapes its peak. A dump site, fertile with plastic bags, roiling in the mount's current of hot wind. Every hour, trucks line up. Lupa, garbage, earth, basura. The people swim in detritus, endless as the waves that surround these islands. They know the discarded currency, losing lottery stubs, empty formula tins, rice sacks, San Miguel glass. If they close it, we'll follow the trash. And me, a Balikbayan, I've come here to what? I follow my tour guide, Boyet, the barangay captain. I enter his home, drink his beer. We eat pulutan, savor fried patty crabs balanced with calamansi. Before us, Payatas climbs ever higher against the sky. There are things more foul than trash. Children, no longer allowed on its peak, splash in a wading pool built by Martin Sheen. Boyet shows me autographed headshots of Marlon Brando and Dennis Hopper. His uncle was an extra in Apocalypse Now. We clink bottlenecks. When you return, he says, tell people we don't want their pity. From the mural behind us, Rizal, Ilustrado, painted and hollowed, stares beyond us at this mountain.
Yeah, what a great poem to end it on. Have you ever read the journals of Pigafetta? He's this Italian guy who was on Magellan's expedition to the Philippines, and
I mean, I've heard of him, but I've never read his journals.
Yeah, but I guess like the description of the islands was sort of like one of the things that became this popular book in Spain, I think, or whatever. And it's one of the things that sort of like maybe led to colonialization when they came back with Legazpi years later, and. To go back to your idea of kind of like colonial powers naming and What did it mean for you to sort of like, at once sort of other yourself as the Balik Bayan, but also, you know, write about, the real kind of marginalized, sort of like a very marginalized community in there, turn that around, I guess, and like, sort of defy your own Western gaze at this, and that mm-hmm. like when he tells them we don't want their pity, I found that very arresting.
Yeah, I mean I've only ever been twice. I just remember one of the things that's most arresting, to use your word, about being there is that, you know, is just the constant like interstitial space, or like being to be Filipino American is to be foreign everywhere. I mean, I think a lot of immigrant Americans, but especially Asian Americans, experience this of like, I'm so American, like when I've been to the Philippines, it's so like obvious.
You stand out a little bit.
Move, or like even if I was silent, it would be apparent from my clothing to the way my eyes move to just like everything. And so, I mean, in this poem, like I actually have been to Payatas. That's where this originated. And like, part of it comes out of the experience in reality. I mean, this is, that phrase is something someone who lives there said, you know, like, because someone asked the question, because we went there as part of like a tour with various NGOs, and like that was part of the Tagalog on site thing, and like that ended up itself was a strange power dynamic, to be on a tour of this mountain of trash, barangay, that like we got kind of two tours. Like it was like Payatas in like, I want to say it was like maybe 2000 or not super long ago, but like there was a trash avalanche, and like a lot of people died because there wasn't any regulation on this dump at all. It was just like a place that trucks just kept emptying trash from various parts of Quezon City and Manila, and like people went there and built a village around it and a barangay, and they like created their own power lines that they took power from the grid. Like they were industrious and they created a community. And then like there was this other tour, and I don't know, there's just a lot of, I mean, what you're talking about, there's a lot of like just jarring simultaneous contradictions, right? Where like the smell of that place, but then like in this man's, the barangay captain's house, there was like a pool table, you know, and like we were eating delicious food and drinking beer. And there's like this mountain of trash, and like the gaze of being, I don't know, that consciousness, right, of like being both foreigner there and foreigner here. Like, you know, like growing up in Middle Tennessee, I was always foreign. I mean, even right now, like, you know, like that's just what it means to be Asian American, I think, to mostly, unless you live in like specific neighborhoods in specific places, like and like you're never American, or like if you are, it's like conditional, or it's got an asterisk or whatever next to it. But then like you go to the place where you've been told you know, so many times in your life to go back to where you're from, and you're not from there either, but you are too,
right?
But you're not, you know. So it's this constant like back and forth. And in terms of like class, that is very stark in the Philippines. And in that mm-hmm. poem, like just the amount of like sheepishness and shame of like even being there, like right. What business do you even have to be like literally there? But mm-hmm. then you're also like a witness too, mm-hmm. like, and he's being this the Boranga captain in that poem is talking to the speaker like, well, you're here, bear witness, don't let people pity us,
right?
You know, tell them about this place, but don't you dare pity us. And I think that's really Filipino, really. Yeah, it is complicated. And I mean, there's all this space to make mistakes in it, but it's...
Yeah, it's a fine line. I think you do a good job, though, in your book.
Thanks, Jane. And, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
We're talking today to Michelle Peñaloza, the author of Former Possessions of the Spanish Empire. You've been listening to Between the Covers on KBOO Portland, and I'm your host, Jake Vermoss.
Coming up next, it's Words and Pictures. SW's Concert speaks with Gary and Ann Lundgren of Ashland, who have produced an independent feature entitled Phoenix, Oregon, a comedic look at midlife struggles in the rural Northwest.